Welcome to Strange Fruit, y'all. This is Jay.
And this is Kyla.
And you're listening to Strange Fruit
on WFPL.org.
So let's hop right into it, y'all, with this week's edition of Juicy Fruit. Well, we have something very interesting to share with you all. If you haven't heard, a very interesting case of a television reporter in Louisiana who was fired recently for responding to a viewer post on the news station's Facebook page. And so her name was Rhonda Lee, and she is a black woman who has short hair. And so apparently one of the station's viewers wrote on the Facebook page, you know, the black lady who does the news should wear a wig or grow some hair, is what this person says to her.
And so, oh my goodness.
And so Ms. Lee writes back and says something to the effect of, I'm sorry that you don't like my ethnic hair. And, you know, I'm very proud of my African-American heritage. And she went on to explain in a very diplomatic way that for black folks, our hair doesn't grow down, our hair grows up. And I know you talked about a bit about that, and we'll come back to kind of like what you talk about in this situation. But anyhow, Ms. Lee writes back to this listener, explains, you know, I'm very proud of my hair. This is what black hair grows. And subsequently, Ms. Lee was fired from the station. Apparently, she broke a policy against responding to viewers or to listeners. But interestingly enough, just a few weeks ago, there was another case of a white woman who was also a newscaster, who was, if you will, a plus-size woman, a bigger woman. And someone went on her station's website and says, you know, that fat lady is a poor representation, a poor role model for young girls.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this. That man.
Yeah, this man says this. But she actually goes on air and kind of really airs him out in a kind of like, you know, she went in hard on him, but she airs him out and is like, you know what? I'm cool like I am. I'm cool in my skin. And she really kind of airs him out for his ignorance. So I want to talk a bit maybe and kind of pick your brain about these two situations that seem to be very similar. In fact, maybe the white woman was a little bit more aggressive in her response, but she keeps her job.
Yeah, because she did hers on the television,
And she celebrated.
The black woman ended up doing it via social networking.
Yeah, but the black woman was fired, you know, in Louisiana.
Okay.
And the white woman was in Wisconsin. But what do you think about kind of the reaction, right? So the black woman is really vilified for kind of breaking that, the wall between like viewers and us as hosts or us as reporters. She kind of broke that invisible wall. So she's vilified. The white woman is celebrated for kind of responding to fat phobic comments. But what do you think about that?
Well, I do think that, well, one, fat phobia is something that's caught a lot of currency lately within the media, especially when we talk about rates of obesity amongst Americans in general. Soda, you know, campaigns to get soda out of kids' schools, lunches.
Put calories on the menus.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of press in and around that. Whereas when it comes to media, there hasn't been that much, I'd say, coverage around skin or hair, right? Hair politics, especially, and when it comes to black women. And so, one, I do think that there is this idea that when black individuals speak in a country that is a racist country, like the United States, it is seen as one more criminal, more harsh, more drastic, more aggressive, and in all these ways, right? Whereas the woman, the bigger woman who is speaking on her own behalf, right, is seen as
empowered.
Her feelings are hurt. She's sad, and you know she's working up the gusto.
Oh, with more empathy. She's viewing more empathy.
Oh, of course. I mean, she's a white woman in America, right? No, regardless of the fact that she's overweight, because of her whiteness, and couple that with her femaleness, she is not seen as someone who is antagonistic, who is aggressive, who is abusive, who is violent, who is criminal. In the same ways in which black women, right, in our country, are seen as that automatically. So when black people do open their mouths, even if it's for the purposes of redress, even if it's to say, hey, I love my hair and I want my hair natural, it's seen as, you know, why do you have to be so divisive? Why do you have to be so angry? Why are you so mad? Whereas this bigger woman was applauded for her response because she finally worked up the gusto and took her power back. And we're so excited that this white woman finally feels powerful, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's just the way that race works. So in our country. I mean, that's just the way it works. So the black woman is fired. Yes, it makes sense to me. In terms of our nation, it's not surprising. And the white woman is applauded. Yeah. Another day in America.
Another day in America. But let's. Oh, and I said I wanted to talk to you about hair issues because you and I both have locks.
Yeah.
And certainly you've had yours longer, but you always get the question about why does your hair do that? I do too. Like, is your hair like a sponge? Is the whole water? And I love how you explain to folk, you know, they think that black people think that our hair doesn't get long. But you talk about how our hair grows down.
Yeah.
And, you know,
we're talking. And I do that. And I say that all the time. And that's actually my sister, my comrade, Dr. Yaba Blay, who is a friend to the show, who we've had on the show before, who just CNN's Black in America was the highest rated Black in America, by the way.
Shout out to Dr. Blay. Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Blay. But anyway, she taught me that because her research area concentrated on hair and skin color politics. And she always taught me that. And she actually used a story in terms of her daughter, Imani, when Imani was little and little white girls asking Imani, you know, about her hair and why her hair didn't grow or why wasn't it long, you know, and Yaba would always say, you need to tell them that my hair doesn't grow down, it grows out. So okay. My hair grows big and white hair grows down. And it has nothing to do with anything but genetics. I mean, that's just how it works, right? Again, if we talk about environment and nature, if we talk about going back to the idea of a caveman or some kind of prehistoric, right? Why do typical whites and or Europeans at one point in time have long hair? Because it's cold and it's frigid and where they're from in the mountains and the Caucasus Mountains and the north and it's freezing and nothing grows there, right? They need hair to protect, right? Now, if you're talking about ancient Africans, they're going to have shorter hair. Everything goes with one's respective environment. And so the fact that it's different makes it, to me, much more interesting. But for young people or any people in general, it makes it somehow, you know, bad. Like your hair, you know, you don't wash your hair every day. And the fact that, you know, young white people feel as if they can ask questions of young black people, ask them about their hair, ask them about their teeth, ask them about their household, really shows and really illuminates the fact that when it comes to a society that is racist coupled with entitlement gets you questions like, how do you do your hair? And it's not about, hey, how do you do your hair? Because I'm genuinely interested. No, it's, how do you do your hair so I can point out your difference and say how you're odd and weird and different from me and I don't like you?
Well, let me ask you about that. Because there is, I guess people would think there is a thin line between honest curiosity and kind of making someone an oddity, right? So yeah. What if you do have folks that are curious about black hair or although, you know, is there a way that a white folk, for example, or someone of a different culture can ask those kind of questions without being offensive? First of all, don't reach over and grab my hair. That's number one. Like, don't touch me without asking.
Yes.
But what are some ways, you know, that you feel like folk can ask those kind of questions and because they want to know, they want to be better people, but without being offensive?
The internet.
Okay. Google it.
Yeah. Yeah, the internet. Because again, we live in the information age and I feel like it's time to Google. I think that's what it's time for. I don't think that African Americans have the responsibility to educate whites on their hair and things that are natural to them, just like I don't think white folks should explain their whiteness and their white Pantene Pro-V hair to me. I don't care.
But
again, I'm not asking you nothing because, again, I don't have white hair. I'm not interested. And my thing is, I don't think it's genuine interest. It's a way for people to, one, deal with their own personal anxiety and fear around difference. And so I'm so nervous. I'm so nervous because you're black and different. Hey, how do you do your hair? It's like, calm down. You know, if you need to smoke a cigarette or you need to go outside and take a breath, take some water, just calm down. Ain't nobody going to whoop you up or beat you up. It's like, you know, people are different. And that is, you know, as Audre Lorde says, it is not our differences that separate us. It is our inability to recognize and relish in those differences. Right?
Amen. On another note, let's talk briefly about the television show Scandal, which we haven't yet talked about, and that's going to lead us into today's guest. We're going to talk a bit about black arts and black creative minds and people who are doing some really cool stuff in both the publishing world and the movie-making world. So we're really juiced about the television show Scandal.
Oh, my God, so
produced
Scandal's
by
the best.
Shonda Rhimes, who also did, she's so silly, who also did Grey's Anatomy. She's also done Private Practice, and Scandal is her newest show featuring Kerry Washington. And we are just juiced about that show. It is a wonderful.
Oh, my God. And now it's about to go on like a winter season finale, winter break.
Certainly.
And, you know, I'm just so anxious because now we're trying to find out, you know, what's going on with the president. I mean, first of all, I live for Kerry Washington. And not only because she's gorgeous and she's sweet and looks like a little parakeet, but it has to do with the fact that she's always taking really risky roles, roles that could be seen as, you know, career bad or ending. Problematic. Yeah. Yeah, because she was also in She Hate Me by Spike Lee, which, you know, is around.
And she played a trans woman. She played a trans woman in a movie a few years ago, too.
All right, Kerry. Yeah. And she's really politically oriented. I mean, I just live. And I live for Rhymes in the sense of her creating a show where it's the first black female lead in 37 years. I mean, first of all, let's point that out. It's the first black female lead in network television for 37 years.
That's almost older than you.
First of all, it is older than me.
Oh.
And then second of all, the last one was Diane Carroll.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, that is absolutely nuts, right? And so I like the fact that, you know, as a producer and as a creator of art, she paid attention to the social political milieu surrounding media and the fact that, you know, there are dope women of color out here doing really incredible things. And so let me highlight that. Let me use my access to highlight that. So, I mean, we love Scandal. We're tuned in every Thursday. I don't want nobody talking to me. I mean, my heart
off Facebook, Twitter.
I'm off Twitter. I mean, I tweet and stuff, but I don't want nobody talking back. I mean, only if it's like Yaba or any of my other sister scholars, we will all watch it. One of the professors I follow on Twitter, who's best friends with Melissa Harris Perry, I follow her on Twitter, she's the best, and she was saying how Scandal is a fancy black girl heaven, and I agree.
You know what else I love about Shonda Rhimes is that she's very unapologetic about the roles that she writes. And so, for example, someone tweeted her just this past week, a dude tweeted her and was like, you know, what's up with all those gay storylines? You know, what's up with all your gay and lesbian characters? And Shonda's like, you know, first of all, my friends are gay and lesbian. People I know are gay and lesbian. And second of all, just the fact that you asked that question explains that there's still a need for these type things. And she mentions that when she came up, there were no black folks starring in TV shows. So she started writing them, you know, in the same ways that it's important that black people see themselves reflected in media. It's also important that gays and lesbians and other people of color, that all disenfranchised folk see images of themselves on television in more positive roles. So certainly you all check out Scandal. You all let us know what you think. We're going to be live tweeting it every single Thursday. And we're on Facebook. So you all check it out if you haven't already. And it's really, really cool.
Yes.
So speaking of black arts, our first guest this week is our new friend to the show, a lively personality, T'Ron Watkins. T'Ron is a new African-American writer and entertainer. He's also a poet and a comedian. And his first book was the book The Gift. And his newest book is called The Last Virgin. T'Ron tells us about his new book and all about his work as a new author.
All right, my name is T'Ron Watkins. I'm from Louisville, Kentucky, Southside. 22, two-time published author, and I'm up for grabs.
Single and available. All right, T'Ron, well, it's really good to have you here on the show. Certainly, your newest project is a book called The Last Virgin. It's your newest book. Tell us a little bit about that. It's a provocative title. Tell us about The Last Virgin.
The title itself, let's start with the title. The Last Virgin, what I want people to take from that, I should say, is it's finding the virgin within them, you know? It's like, you may not be a virgin sexually.
Literally, okay, yes. I am, of course, but others might not be.
But, you know, there's always something to be learned, and it's subtle about finding, you know, the innocence in you, almost like, you know, how you get older and you lose track of your imagination, you know what I mean? Like you know you want to tap into those things, because there's always something to learn, there's always something new around the corner. So it's all about, you know, finding that.
Tell us a bit about how you became a poet and an author. Was something in your life inspire you to do that? Have you always been creative? What made you want to tell your stories?
It was like I've always written, you know, I've always been a writer, just never knew it. And I remember, like, in middle school, sixth grade, I would be making up a story, and it'd be very detailed and very, you know,
advanced for my age.
But it got so bad, it was, you know, because I would be in class, and I would be writing stories and not paying attention at all, you know?
What you should have been doing, yeah.
But, I mean, I didn't think it was a bad thing. I would always challenge it. And I started school early on, and I was in advanced programs and advanced classes and things like that. So I was always the youngest, and I would get bored easily, you know? So anytime I got bored in class, it was either I'm going to start acting out and start clowning, you know, or I'm going to start writing. So I would always try to write a bit. And it wasn't until I was in high school, about 11th grade, that I met two ladies. One of them was a librarian at the school, and another was a teacher at the school. And they just embraced it, and they were just like, you know, go for it. And they sort of gave me all the energy I needed to put into the pad and pen. And, you know, it just came naturally, really. And I can crank out, like, a poem in 2 minutes, you know what I mean? It's nothing.
But what makes a 22-year-old, because one thing to say, okay, I'm a good writer, I write really good stories. I mean, certainly throughout grade school, we all do creative writing classes. But what makes a 20-year-old or a teenager say, I can write a book, I can self-publish, you know, I can, so, first I mean, so how do you go from that to writing a book?
First things first, because I'm the youngest of five, so growing up like that, I was always, you know, standing out, trying to stand out. And so, like, with that in mind, like, I don't like to take the path of least resistance. And it's okay. Like, there's not many of us, and by us I mean there's not many young black men who are taking that route, because it's not easy and it's not, you know, common. You know
what
I mean?
It's not conventional, you're right, and that's part of what intrigued
me.
So
that's why, yeah, I went for it. I was like, yeah, screw that, I'm going to try it and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I figured, you know, I have this idea and I have this picture of where I see myself in the future, and as long as I keep going and I'm gonna keep allowing myself to make mistakes along the way, I'm gonna get there, you know. So it took a lot of time by myself, a lot of time listening to older people, you know, and then that's where it all came from. It just finally set in once I was getting near graduating high school, and then I was, you know, first book. And here's my second.
Okay. And congratulations, T-Ron. I really wanted to ask you about in the chapter that you have in the book, The Last Virgin, and the chapter is this the same title. You say, I've always been a self-made outcast, truly. Even growing up, I purposely did things differently from my peers. If everyone was walking, I would run. If anyone asked me to be quiet, I'd scream. My individuality is all I have. That is the one thing that is mine. And that is a very powerful statement.
That's right.
And it's something that really, I got really excited when I read it, because it made me think of my own students and me as a professor trying to teach them to really get into their own subjectivity, their own individuality, right? To,
yeah,
that life is about creating oneself.
Absolutely.
And it's very hard for a lot of my students to actually get into the idea of self. It's a really painstaking exploration. And so to just resound what Jay said earlier about, you know, what specific thing really empowered you to go ahead and say, hey, I want to tell my story. Hey, I'm different and that's okay. Hey, thinking about one's experience and talking about it is okay.
Right. It's not easy, because even as I'm writing it and I know about it, I'm also still learning every day. And that's what I want a lot of people to know, is like, we're all doing this together. This is the struggle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I mean, once you tap into it, and I don't think I'm there yet, but I'm on my way. Once you tap into your true self, then there are no limits, you know? And it's just a day-to-day thing. And I always tell people, it's like you have to take it, not even day-to-day, but definitely hour to hour. As long as you take the time to remind yourself, oh, I can do that, I'm cool. Just every hour, on the hour, you know, even if you have to do it every, you know, 30 minutes, do it in like real time, like in tangible time. And I think a lot of people need something tangible. They have to have something in front of them that, you know, shows their progress. So, you know, if you have to literally take a note, a pad and pen, and say, okay, I'm going to tell myself this, I'm going to tell myself that, then do that. Because as you see it and you look at it, you'll, you know, it inspires you and it allows you to move on. And then before you know it, becomes second nature, you know? You just allow yourself freedom to make mistakes and freedom to trip a little bit, you know?
All right.
Thank you so much.
Here at Strange Fruit, we always encourage new up-and-coming activists, writers, poets, and you are certainly a man on the move. So we encourage all of
praise
our listeners
God.
To go to, praise God, that you go check out your newest book, The Last Virgin, and it's been a delight to have you here. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much.
That was the always lively T-Ron Watkins, very ratchet, new friend to the show. Glad to have him.
Tiona M. is a documentary filmmaker, and her work focuses on Black LGBTQ experiences. We spoke to her earlier this week about her newest film, Bumming Cigarettes.
My name is Tiona. and I am a black lesbian. I'm cool nowadays with being called queer, and I'm an artist. I'm a filmmaker. That's what I do. That's who I am.
Yes, we're so glad that you joined us today, Tiana. I remember your first full-length documentary feature around Black women conversations with lesbians of African descent. It was a phenomenal piece. And I just wanted to ask, what propelled you to make that documentary? Like, what motivated you, said, I have to make this?
Basically, I think my experience growing up in Greenville, South Carolina, coming out for the first time at like 13 to my siblings, and then coming out around 15, 16 to friends in high school, and the limited amount of, I think, resources that I had available to really like have dialogue. I think what I experienced was a lot of social interaction, sneaking off the clubs, like it was like one club. In one part of town, like at night, pretending I'm like going and sleeping over my friend's house and sneaking out to the club. And in that space, it was just, you know, I think like it was very difficult to have conversations. You know, it was like a lot of partying, a lot of people trying to kind of like forget about a lot of the troubles that came with like coming out and being a part of the community. So what I wanted to do is kind of make a film that would have benefited my younger self at that time, once I got the resources. And I was thinking about a lot of my experience early on as an activist, like on the ground, like, you know, doing the marches and sitting in the rooms and at the tables and things. And a lot of the problems that came up in terms of voice and people listening to each other, even within the Black lesbian community specifically. And I kind of wanted to create an experience where I could bring those voices from all those different perspectives and position them in a way where each one was valued, and create a situation where no one was spoken over, but it also created facilitated a conversation that was happening between these people that maybe wouldn't ever talk to each other. So that was really the background, and that's what I, you know, used as the backbone for trying to create the film.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, hey there, Tiana. Thank you for joining us. This is Jason. I want to hop right on in to what I consider to be a really exciting new project from you. We're just off the heels of World AIDS Day, and so one of your newest projects is a short film called Bumming Cigarettes. And in this movie, we see a brief and intimate encounter between a young Black lesbian who's waiting on the results of her HIV test. She runs into a middle-aged Black gay man who is HIV positive. Talk about briefly with us about what Bumming Cigarettes is about and why it was an important film for you to make.
Yeah, Bumming Cigarettes is really about that moment. That's what I started off with, the image and the idea was trying to create this moment. How could I get these two very different individuals together to have this like intimate moment? I made the film again from a personal space. I think a lot of my stuff is really about I think the core of something that's coming out of my work at this point is rememory, or trying to remember and present like these happenings, these moments that I've experienced. And I actually had a similar experience to the one that my main character V has in the film, in terms of like, you know, being in a relationship and there being like kind of cheating and then you feeling compromised around your sexual health. And I wanted to kind of like take people through that experience of exploring the weight, because I think a lot of people have ideas about testing, and especially within the Black lesbian community, a lot of folks feel like they don't need to be tested because we're told that we're not a susceptible demographic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wanted to just really, like, in the film, you actually see my lead character take the test, and I want to kind of, like, demystify, like, what happens in the room, and then also, like, you know, open up that space to have that connection with someone who is actually HIV positive, like what that would look like.
Cool.
And explore the stigmas around that. And also, you know, there's another thing that came out of it for me was trying to kind of create a situation where there was a baton being passed on in terms of what the face of the epidemic looks like.
Yeah.
And trying to position a Black lesbian woman as a member of the community of Black women, because I felt like that's something that's been happening where I felt personally as a Black lesbian, especially like last year during the 30th anniversary, because I was actually born the same year of the discovery of the virus. So last year was really a weird year for me because I felt like I was being challenged in terms of my Black womanness because I was a Black lesbian and being cut out of a conversation. And I would have to be like, well, I have sex with Black women, you know, kind of reminding people, like, so why wouldn't I be at risk? So it was important for me to facilitate something that acknowledged that the face has been Black gay men, but this can be a face as well, and an acknowledgement of how this, like, kind of baton is being passed on and shared in terms of, like, you know, responsibility. Yeah, and to also spark a conversation between both communities. So I feel like there is tension around who owns this fight, you know, which is an odd thing in itself. So
we haven't seen it yet, of course. Well, I know it just had one of its biggest premieres, but of course we're in Kentucky, so it takes, you know, I think Mark Twain said, like, as the rest of the country goes, Kentucky's like 10 years behind. So,
It just came out. It's not even.
But child, it just came out, but I tell you what, we're not going to get into like World AIDS Day 2020, you know, but that's just how Kentucky goes.
2012.
Yeah, 2012, you know, but, you know, definitely. you mentioned you're from the South, so you can probably identify with kind of, you know, the things that we go through in the South. You talk about, you know, HIV and AIDS, certainly we know that HIV is an epidemic, you know, in large proportions in D.C. and Philly and bigger cities. But it also is something that we're struggling with here in the South. And we have far less resources. Exactly. We don't have the Whitman Walker Clinic and the agencies and nonprofits that really do kind of prevention work for Black folk and Black queer folk. We don't have those agencies in the South as we do in the North. And so we do certainly struggle just as much with these issues in the South with much less resources. So. Yes,
true,
I'm glad to see.
And there's another thing too. It's a southern. I mean, I have to constantly tell people because I'm like, I'm southerner. That's all I've ever known, except this the stint of me, you know, trying to live up north.
Yeah.
Is like people don't understand what the gaze of the community is like. So even if there are like they have these, you know, the HIV testing and centers and these community centers, I'm like, who is going?
Yeah.
Because people are concerned about what people see. So
yes.
I'm like. You got to understand, like, Black Southern history in terms of, like, you know, and there's this kind of idea around shame that's very heavy.
Break it down for us on a very approachable level. So, like, people are worried about who's seeing me going to and from this clinic.
Yeah.
You know,
yes,
who's working there? Do they go to my church? And...
Yeah, I think the gaze within the community is very much stronger, I think, in the South in terms of perception and putting on airs and appearances because there's a certain level. There's like, it's like Inception. I tell people that she was like Inception. It's like all these stages of oppression. And so you end up finding people who are just battling everything. So the least that they want, you know, people to think of is like, you know, something that is a stereotype of the community. So you have people really concerned very much about what people see in terms of appearance. I mean, this is I'm going home. I'm from Greenville, South Carolina. I'm going home, and I'm going to be doing some, like, little private screenings and stuff like that. And I have to, right? Because people, in a certain extent, wouldn't even come out because they don't want to see people coming to my screenings.
Mm.
You know, like, they don't want people to see them entering into the space that's gay or, you know, what have you. And so it's like, I don't know. I think it creates a situation where people are tricking themselves into thinking that they're okay.
Okay.
Because... of aesthetic, of like, you know, wanting to appear okay when things are not okay.
That's deep. All right. You took us somewhere.
I know. Okay. I was like marinating on that. Okay. Can you speak to us a little bit about this new project that's coming up called the Untitled Black Lesbian Elder Project that's to be released in 2014?
Yeah, this is probably one of the most important projects I'll ever do. This is basically a film documentary, feature-length documentary that's examining Black lesbian history within America from the 1930s to the 1980s. And the way that we're going about it is really, really intensive and very detailed and, like, structured in terms of, like, how looking through a lot of archives, ephemera, writing, and actually trying to find a lot of women who've never been recognized, I think, due to, you know, just, I think, a lack of documentation during those eras, during those decades.
Yeah.
And so the goal is also, with this project, for me, that I'm very excited, is positioning Black lesbian history alongside and kind of showing how it's also ingrained and forcing like reclaiming space within Black movement. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking at like civil rights. I'm looking at the women's, you know, movements, LGBT movements, and going back and revisiting some of those same things and finding women who had key positions, who identified as lesbian at the time, kind of to state claim, because I think there's a trend right now in these, you know, these nostalgic documentaries that are coming out, especially the Black ones, that are revisiting, like, the Black, you know, the Black Panther movement, this, that, and another, and it's cutting out all of these, you know, queer voices. Specifically for me, I'm looking at, you know, Black lesbian women who literally have just completely been cut, out. Mm. And so it's a very challenging piece. It's going to be really awesome. I think for me personally, it's an amazing experience for me to be able to examine my history and to actually look at this part of myself as identifying as a Black lesbian as something that has a history, because I don't think that people really see it as such in terms of movement, like to look at it in the perspective that I am across these decades, 50-plus years, of movement, and I'm trying to present it in a way where it's digestible and entertaining so people can really see it as something just as big as the Black movement or the women's movement, LGBT movement, you know, in terms of looking at it as something that brought something, that birthed something, you know?
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure to have you.
And thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is really cool.
So what a great show.
As always.
Yes, I truly enjoyed both T-Ron.
T-Ron and Tiana, they both were really, really awesome.
And T-Ron was a hoot.
He was a lot of fun. I'm glad to have him as a new friend. I want to take a minute real quick to give a shout out to our new family members here at WFPL. We at Louisville Public Media, we went to the holiday party.
Oh, we did.
And it was festive, you know?
It was very festive.
It felt cute to be a part of, you know?
I thought it was really cute. I mean, I was scared that I was going to break things in that house. I mean, that house was so nice.
Yeah, shout out to the hostess. Her house is very nice, y'all. And
your
so
house,
I mean,
is ready and right.
Her house is really nice. I mean, it was decked out with all kind of spreads and crudités and all these little hors d'oeuvres. Of course, the house was lovely with artwork. And, you know, I will say this to everybody. You know, we being the new kids on the block here at WFPL, we're a little bit apprehensive about how we'd be received, but everybody was really, really cool.
So nice.
Certainly, we know, like, our producer, Laura, and Gabe, our boss, but then we met the larger, like, board members and spouses. And everybody was really chill. So
Everybody was really sweet.
It really has been a delight, if we haven't made it clear already, to really be doing this venture. You want to give a special shout-out to...
I want to give a special shout-out to one of our newest...
Fruitcakes,
Linda Golden.
And Linda's the wife of like, our boss here, the news director.
Hey, honey. Yes, Gabe.
And so, you know, we just have met so many cool folks, y'all.
And she is a fruitcake, and she loves the show.
She loves the show, yeah.
How you doing, Linda?
Yeah, so we have met so many cool folks, both in person. We've had a wonderful week, y'all. All kinds of retweets and reposts. From the Feminist Wire to Darnell Moore to Cola Booth gave us a shout out.
I was so excited. Mark Anthony Neal.
So, you know, we have been really, truly, you know, blessed, if you will, by the universe that our show is really catching on. So please continue, y'all, to tune in, support us, let folks know to check us out. And as always, you know, may the fruit be with you.
Oh my God, I'd love that.
Okay,
may the fruit be with you. Yes,
and we'll see y'all next time. Okay, take care.
Bye. Strange Fruit is produced by 89.3 WFPL in Louisville, Kentucky. Our producer is Laura Ellis. The views we and our guests express on Strange Fruit don't reflect those of WFPL, Louisville Public Media, its staff, or its underwriters.
For more information on Strange Fruit, go to WFPL.org, find us on Facebook, and visit us on Twitter at Strange Fruit Pod. I'm Jason Gardner.
And I'm Kyla Story. Thanks for listening.